The champ.
The champ.
Ha! I have a question for you.
Yeah? Already?
Yeah. If we were to have Bill Champlin and Tamara Champlin, are we hosting the co-champs?
Co-champs. Yes. Yes. Like Michigan and Nebraska.
What?
Weren't they co-champs?
No.
No?
Yeah, you've got your facts and history wrong.
Oh.
So we're going to get into a little history real quick.
Okay.
But before we do, did you see that we have a YouTube channel now?
We do. We have a few videos up there growing, an ever-growing library.
So the idea is we are going to post the uncut, unedited interviews that we do with our guests.
Yeah, and you even get to see a little behind the scenes, because sometimes when we talk about, oh, we're going to edit that out, you know.
Right, exactly.
We do that for the podcast, but it doesn't get edited out for
YouTube. They're probably a little bit longer, too, extended cut. So if
for
you
sure.
really want to see the full what do I call it? The
unsomething.
Whatever. It's it's raw.
It's very un.
So check us out. We will link to that in all of the show notes, but you can find our YouTube channel by searching for the At Rock Podcast out of the Main.
Right.
On YouTube. Mm-hmm. So let's see if you got your history right.
Okay.
So what were you doing in February?
Which day?
The day we went down to Dayton.
That was a good day.
Yes.
That was a good day. We went down to Dayton for the inaugural We Will Yacht You concert in Dayton, Ohio, featuring the 80s sort of tribute band Stranger.
Yep.
With a couple of special guests. We had Frankie Previtt was there, and we had had him on the show.
Yep.
Frankie Previtt from Frankie and the Knockouts, as well as the writer of a couple of hits from the Dirty Dancing soundtrack. And then also was Bill Champlin and Tamara Champlin, and they were excellent.
Oh, yeah, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
Well, we were lucky enough to get invited down to the concert, which would have been a thrill just to be able to be in the room and watch the show.
Yeah.
But we got an opportunity to actually talk to Bill and Tamara.
Yeah, at their hotel.
At their hotel, yep.
Very impromptu.
Very impromptu.
It's like we got there, and it's like, well, let's see if we can find a room. And the concierge there got us a little room and a table, and we opened up the laptop. And, you know, what was intended to be an interview turned into more of a kind of a just a shoot the breeze session,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, chit-chat. Yep. We weren't sure exactly when we were rolling tape or when we were beginning. But,
right.
And then we got to go to sound check, which we'll talk about a little bit at the end of this episode. So, as you mentioned, we found an empty room. We set up a mic, hit record. And what we're going to do today is just talk through some of the clips from that chat, right?
Exactly.
We didn't have the video cameras rolling, so this will not be on YouTube,
right.
But this will be a two-part episode because we kind of ran into the sound check a little bit.
Almost.
Yeah, almost. we started familiar territory, did we not?
Yeah, we did. I had a couple of questions written out, and the interview, like I said, went sort of off the map after that, but this is how it started.
I guess the first question I had for you is, as I was looking through some of your catalog and things, we'd always heard the story about how Turn Your Love Around was written, and it's a bizarre story. But I saw you as a co-writer on there, and I did not know that. I thought it was purely Jay and Lukather that wrote that. But what was
your
role on
that? I'll ever talk about, but I wrote the lyrics.
You did the lyrics on
the song and the melody. Actually, they had the melodies pretty much, except I wrote the melodies for the bridge. And I did all the lyrics on the record and did all the background vocals for George's version of it.
Mm.
And yeah, the three of us actually wrote the song. So that was my second Grammy. I was second Grammy in 2 years, and I figured, hey, I'm going to get one every 2 years.
Right.
I was wrong.
So I think it's funny when he said that he thought he was going to get a Grammy every 2 years. You know, you got two in 2 years. I mean, they're solid too, though, you know, but...
All I was wondering is if we're going to get the explicit tag put on the podcast right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that was cool. Yeah, so like you said, the interview went off the map, but I did have my first question teed up.
You did.
Because I think I read something somewhere or maybe you were telling me on the way down that Bill and Tamara either wrote or spoke somewhere about the difference between being the lead singer and a backup singer, and I wanted to ask them how that sort of technique changed, if it changed, and this is what they said.
Well, if you both sing, so we're here with Tamara and Bill, you both sing backups, you both sing lead, and I'm wondering, you know, I'm not a vocalist, but I marvel at what you guys do. Can you talk about how your technique might change if you are in the background as opposed to, you know, the cover on the record? Is there a change in technique? Either one of you could take that first.
We both have such unique voices that we wonder about blending and how you approach that.
I always found backgrounds to be, you know, you got to do backgrounds and do it well. You got to learn how to think and sing at the same time. Because here comes this and here comes that. You got to know exactly where things go because you're going to end up doubling it. You got to blend with the other people. All of those things are in mind while you're singing. When you're singing a lead, really all you got to think about is, what is the song? What does it say? Let's try to bring it across. So they're two different approaches to singing.
Different mentality.
And, you know, and for a while there, everything I was doing sounded like backgrounds. And my lead started to sound like backgrounds. And Tam finally said, why don't you just sing a lead vocal and then do the backgrounds? But get the lead to where it feels like something. I went, oh, you're right.
So you were stacking all the backgrounds?
If you start it with the backgrounds, because Bill can do, he can arrange the everything to incredibly vocally, you know, because that's what he's really known for in a lot of ways and in some circles. But he, you know, if you lock yourself into that, then your lead is limiting yourself. Yeah. If you sing your lead and say what you want to say, you know, and get the feel of the
touch
song.
Touch people in a different
you're,
way.
People got to hear your lyrics and feel what you're singing.
The backgrounds are pretty much part of the band.
Okay.
And the lead's pretty much part of the story. It seems.
Yeah,
it's supposed,
a great
it's
way to
supposed
it.
To be, you know?
Interesting.
Before we actually were officially on air, you told us a quick story about a turning point in your singing career where you got a brand new influence and started singing a little differently, and the name you brought up surprised me. So,
well, I mean, I was kind of started off as a sort of a pop. I wanted to be just a pop singer, which was whatever was going on. We're talking about mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
And early 60s, actually, and Rob Moitoza is a gentleman that I work with a lot. He turned me on to James Brown, the James Brown Band. I love James Brown, but boy, did I dig his band. Those guys were ridiculous, just insane. So I fell in love with that, and I've just kind of become a lot more aware of R&B. It was a radio station in town, and I remember where I was the first time I heard Lou Rawls on the station. I just went, and this is before You'll Never Find, this is long before that.
Okay.
This is 23 albums before that. Wow. When he did Tobacco Road and the first two albums. One was Black and Blue, and the other was Tobacco Road album. Tobacco Road was a big hit for him. It's a country tune, and a young producer put them together with a really great arranger, and they did the version of Tobacco Road that he did. And Lou's phrasing was so in the back. They just kind of held back, really back phrased almost everything.
As in behind the beat?
Yeah, not behind it, but just, you know, if the beat's perfect at 50, he sang everything at 45,
okay,
or 49.96. You know, just right back here. D'Angelo is known for back phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people went, hey, D'Angelo's the first guy that ever did that. And I said, it's wrong. Lou Rawls did that, you know. And then later on, we kind of became friends. But I've just listened to those first two albums of his. I don't know whether you know it. Remember Bring It On Home by Sam Cooke?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. The guy singing with him is Lou Rawls.
Really?
Yeah, it's really a duet. Yeah.
I'll listen for that again.
That was Lou, yeah.
I did not.
Because they sang in a gospel group, Pilgrim Travelers. And I think they sang in two different gospel groups together. So they knew each other from the get. So, you know, that was kind of Lou's, getting into secular music as opposed to gospel. And he tore it up, you know.
It's funny because I can hear that so much in your singing at times, you know, the gospel, the blues, the R&B. But then you go and kind of jumping forward a little in the timeline, the CWS stuff, and it's much more of a rock, AOR.
It's either rock area. Or rock or kind of West Coasty.
So my most interesting thing takeaway from that was that when he said his biggest influence was the early 60s era Lou Rawls, and specifically he mentioned Tobacco Road.
Yeah.
And Lou's, when you mentioned back phrasing, he kind of means that he sings a little bit behind the beat. We talk about being ahead of the beat, on the beat, behind the beat. And Lou would sing behind the beat a little bit and kind of drag. And he, what Bill says something somewhere along the line in one of these clips, he says, it's just sexier back there. I love that.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And it's interesting to get Tamara's take, too, on some of this stuff as well. The serendipity, though, of the timing of this interview, because we had already booked Peter Freestadt.
Yeah.
And so if you heard that episode a few weeks ago, we spoke with Peter, and then we learned the story of Peter having is cojones a Swedish word?
It is not.
No.
He had them, though.
He had them to take a chance. And we heard it from Peter's standpoint,
right?
And now we got to hear the
story. We had to verify the story, yeah. Right? So we went straight to the source.
And here's how that turned out from Bill's perspective.
Yeah, he called me up and he says, hey, could you write a song with us? And for some reason, he had the ball to just call me out of nowhere and ask me to do it. And I went, sure, here's my house, come over. So we brought it over and I think at this point it was a CD, just with a rough melody and a rough idea. And he said, yeah, I'll write it. So I wrote it. He says, well, we'll cut it on Wednesday. And so I went to the studio and I figured that they'd already had the track and I'd go in and overdub over the track, like every other session that I did in those days. Mm-hmm. I walk in and there's pretty much Yellow Jackets.
Yeah.
Wow. Playing on it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, dig this. So we sang it all live. You know, it just all went live. And actually, Peter got Mark Richmond to play rhythm guitar on the session. So anyway, so we did that, you know, and it was one of my, you know, Russ Ferranti is one of my favorite piano players ever. There's a guy who sits on the back end of the group. Him and Joe Sample were both back here. It's sexier. Just, you sit back there, it's just sexier somehow. And then at some point he says, hey, we got this other song we're doing, this little funky sort of groove thing that we're gonna do. And I was in there. He says, you want to sing it? I says, is it written? He says, no. You want to write it and sing it? I was pretty much writing it on the vocal date, you know, on the date singing with the band. So by the time they got to like take three, I got the third verse done. And I went, okay, here it is. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, Bridge Over Troubled Waters or Amazing Grace or anything. Somebody said, what are the three best songs ever written? Is Amazing Grace, Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and the song I wrote this morning.
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course.
Right, good.
First he says, you want to sing it? Then he says, you want to write it? That's great stuff.
Make Bill do all the work.
Yeah.
Switching gears.
Mm-hmm.
I had an opportunity to ask a living legend which version of one of his songs is the best.
Yeah.
Right.
We'd already talked to Jay about this. We knew what Jay Graydon thought.
Yep, exactly. I had my own opinion, but who better to ask than Bill Champlin, who's been on how many versions now?
Oosh. Four or five.
Well, put a pin in that because I'm going to come back to that.
Okay.
But anyways, here's how that question kind of got answered and expounded upon.
Well, speaking of another song that you wrote in another Grammy that you won, I have to ask you, which is the best version of After the Love Has Gone?
The Graydon version on Airplay for the Planet.
Really?
That's really great. Foster played a little bit different piano part. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as big and giant with the big strings. And I mean, the wire choir guitar section in the middle of it is through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, Jay does that better than anybody.
Interesting.
He was actually beta testing the new ADAP machines. Mm. So he had three of them in sync. Right, so when you link up the three ADAP machines, it's you start hearing it play, and then when the second one comes in, the music goes any length
as it gets up to speed.
So we're talking about After the Love Is Gone, which is in five different keys on the chorus alone.
Yeah.
And having this machine go, right before I go, I said, where the hell are you? Finally, I said, Jay, why don't you just lie to Marcus Ryle, who invented the ADAP. Just lie to him, tell him you did it on there. Let's fly this over to the two beautiful MCI 24 track. Let's go to the 24. It took 3 days to sing the vocal on that.
Really?
The vocal on the background on that. Because of
So you never ended up down.
No, man, I got to do it Marcus's way. I said, well, then give me way more.
Yeah, run up.
You know, give me a little more ramp so that it can, so I can get some kind of idea of pitch. Because it's like, oh, it's a whole song in portamento.
Yeah.
You know what we just learned, at least I just learned, is that the Earth, Wind, and Fire version, the chorus, what Philip is singing is the, it sounds like the melody to me, but it's actually the harmonies.
Yeah, it's actually Maurice.
Oh, that's Maurice that sings that part.
Yes.
So
Maurice's falsetto was beautiful.
Oh,
thank you. And then later on, you can hear when Philip comes in, it's you know, Phil Bailey. He's just one of the best at a certain kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But Maurice kind of, I think, was he just produced a really good record.
Yeah. Did it ever bother you? Because it sounded like it bothered Jay Graydon a little bit, but that vocal was slightly altered. Every other version has the melody singing in the
chorus.
As you did.
Right. Play.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, Maurice, you know, what do you tell Maurice what to do? No. Yeah, he got it. I think, and David was, I mean, it was the last song we'd written for my first album. And I'd cut a couple of demos on it, and then, you know, I always had the wrong drummer. Something was always wrong. Maybe I wasn't singing it great on the original version. And but Foster was working as a piano player for Earth, Wind, and Fire. I think he was playing on September or something like that, or one of the other tunes on I Am. And the tape was rolling back. Remember those days?
Yes, I do. I am old enough to remember.
At that time, with David, he was on such a roll. It didn't matter. It could have been perfect for you. However, he could see the next step for him, and that song especially, would be to give it to Maurice and go with, you know, spread it. You know, it's like Paul McCartney would love everybody doing their song.
Right. Maurice basically was in that kind of place. He says, if Bill will agree to not release it, not put it on his record, we'll put it on ours.
And this was supposed to be on single or on?
It was going
to
be on single.
On single. Okay. Yeah. For some reason,
another one away. And then Maurice said, I'd like two more songs. Also, if you same deal, you know, if Bill will choose to not release them. I went, why not just give him the whole fucking album? Then I got no record, you know.
Right.
And David, at one point, David said, you know, you could do this. We can rewrite. We can just take a day and write, replace those two, you know. But there were two songs I really liked a lot. One was maybe Love Is Forever, and the other one was Fly With Me, which we kind of needed.
How much pushback was there from you to?
I just said, well, let's just do After the Love Is Gone, leave it at that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You then have to ask, would you have gotten a Grammy had it happened?
And then CBS was like, oh, this is just a black boogie band. We don't release singles. And David happened to be in New York City. He was back there producing Hall & Oates record along the Old Ledge.
Their session started
at 1. And David spent the mornings going over to the Black Rock and just banging on doors. You got to release this. This is a single. It's going to be a good single. This is a single. This is going to fly. These guys need this song. You guys need this song. And I think they released it as a single just to get Foster out of their face. One of the first times Foster actually treated that song the way Diane Warren treats every song she writes.
They all love the phrase wire choir, right? Those harmonized lead guitars got to be known as the wire choir. Because I was talking to Peter Freestead again just the other day, and everything's wire choir this, wire choir that. I love, guitarists love that.
I've been saying it nonstop since we went on a date myself. So
that was funny when he said Maurice White wanted two more songs. And he's like, you give him the whole album.
There is some controversy, though, because when we talked to Jake Graydon, didn't he say that the lead there, you know, because we talk about how the harmony is actually the melody or vice versa, but didn't Jay tell us something different? He said it was Maurice singing.
Oh, that's right. We thought that it was Philip Bailey singing the high part, and he said, no, that's actually Maurice in the falsetto.
Right. And then Bill said it was Philip in his head voice.
In his head voice, yeah.
So the mystery continues. Who else can we ask? We could get David Foster on the show and settle this.
Yes. And going back to the idea that Maurice wanted two more songs, kind of connects me to the one of the earlier clips where Bill thought he might be getting a Grammy every 2 years. Maybe if he gave a couple of songs to Earth, Wind & Fire, he might have another Grammy.
Yeah.
You never know.
Who knows? He may have even gotten credit for it.
Yes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So where do we go next?
Well, we got into a discussion about songwriting and about making a song a hit. How does a song become a hit? There was a lot of stuff there. It was just like an open discussion. They hit on something really, really interesting that we think of producers and record executives and even artists really hawking their material hard, you know, doing gigs to support or going to radio stations or doing promotion, all this stuff. I don't often think of a songwriter going out and doing that. And so they talked to us about Diane Warren and this image of, okay, she writes a song, she gets Chicago to record it. Now she's going to make sure not only that Chicago records it, but she's going to make darn well sure that radio gets behind it too. And so she takes it upon herself. And that was a heck of a story. So I want to hear a little more about that.
She fights for it.
Does she?
Oh, yeah. She's
got a lot of grace.
It's like having a baby. Some people have a baby and gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done. I've done my job. It's over with. She raises them through school, puts them in college, gets a master's degree on her songs. We had a song Look Away with...
I was going to say, you've sung a few of her songs.
And Diana, right? there was a station somewhere in the lower Midwest. I can't remember where it was. It might have been St. Louis or something. And she... they just weren't going on the tune. She got on the plane, took the program director to dinner. She knew that every one of his kids' names, they were, you know, she had a handful of records with him. And she just twisted his arm until he went on the song. That's a songwriter at best.
So not just to get it placed, but also to get it
placed. Once it was played,
she falls.
Once it was played, the song went through.
She does what publishers used to do. She just, her own.
At one point, Diane was, she was writing all her songs. And she published them all. She had a piano in one room in this office she was renting, on a big building on Cahuenga, and a piano in the next room with the cassette, 4-track cassette recorder. Mm-hmm. I forget the TIAC.
TIAC thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of how she, you know, got the stuff recorded, just enough to hear the song back. And at one point she was the best. She was the top publisher in the world. By herself with this one little...
By herself.
And she just did all her collections herself, did the whole thing herself. And I think at some point in the game, she went, I got to hire somebody because it's just getting crazy. I'd heard a story, I'm not sure whether it's actually true, but that same building, she'd had a lot of luck writing songs in this one office. And they went to sell the building. This was after she had 25 fucking number one hits. Not that many, but maybe 10 really big hits. And she... They said, we're going to sell the building. We may have to toss you out. And she went, oh, can we make sure that part of the deal is that I can keep my office? I said, no, we can't. Once they buy the building, it's up to them.
Can't guarantee that.
And so she bought the building.
Oh, well, there you go. Fine, I'll buy it.
She went, okay, I got this. I don't want to lose my spot, you know. It's probably still there as far as I know. She's a sweetie pie. A lot of people gave her a lot of shit because she just came out of nowhere. Her first hit... was Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Believe it or not.
Great groove in that tune, yeah.
Oh, man. Elle can sing his ass off, can't he?
Oh, yeah.
He's a major.
Then it was my job to, what do we call it? I embarrass the guest. That's my new role, right?
I thought that was my job, but go ahead.
No, you embarrass me.
Oh.
And yourself.
And myself, yes. True. Yeah, I'm embarrassed
right
now.
We're going to talk, we're going to embarrass the guest with some serious praise.
So one of the things that I do on this show sometimes is embarrass our guests with praise. I had to tell you that I've had this sort of running list of the top three pop ballads of all time. There's usually 10 songs in this list, but it's rotation. But the three that always come to mind when somebody asks me that question, like, what are your favorite ballads? And I'm a big fan of Reasons by Earth, Wind & Fire. Number two is Still by the Commodores. And three is Sarah. That song, ooh, Sarah, that you wrote, it still just punches me in the chest every time I hear it.
Pretty song, isn't it? I had the music for it and a doo-doo-da-da lyric.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hitting, I was just batting zero with it. Nothing was going on. And we were doing stuff that David said, how's he doing with the lyrics? I said, I'm just blanking. Mm-hmm. And Alan Thicke was hanging around. And Al said, let me take a shot at it. So I took a cassette machine, played kind of generally on a Rhodes, handed it to him. He came back 2 days later with the lyrics. And,
was he around the musician circuit a lot?
Well, he was around David's pretty much. They're both Canadian.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they kind of hung out a lot. There was a good hang right there. And I had worked with Alan on a lot of other things, just different songs that he'd written, you know, for his TV shows and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Tamara was one of the singers in the band on his
show,
Thick of the Night. Which,
oh, really?
Yeah. People would refer to it as Sick of the Hype, but Thick of the Night. And, you know, Al's just one of those guys that we kind of cross paths a lot. I remember Robin say last time, all of a sudden he's got a number one record on the radio. I'm going, last time I saw Robin, he was 2 years old. Time flies when you're burning out.
The subject matter is a bit risque for a 2 year old.
I hadn't seen him in years.
He's
hitting the mic. Well, he was just bucking for a percussion over
here. Don't get me on the
percussion step. Yeah. I need the money.
That's right.
I wondered on the way down when we were driving down how quickly the conversation would turn to Alan Thicke. It was later than I thought.
Later?
Yeah.
In the thick of the night, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Just as an aside, since as long as we're thinking about things that make us laugh, is how many times Bill would take a title of a song and like take the consonants and swap them out to make some sort of innuendo.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention any of those.
He was doing it all night at soundcheck.
I know. And she's just rolling her eyes. You know, she probably came up all these years surrounded by a bunch of guys, and guys being guys, especially musicians being musicians. And, you know, she's completely immune to it now. And she's just rolling her eyes at all this stupid 12-year-old humor that Bill's got.
And I made me think of my own band when we used to
gig around.
Same thing. Like, to know that the superstars, if he's doing exchanging these bits with David Foster and Peter Cetera, it's just hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyways. Well, you mentioned...
I still want to say one, but I just can't do it.
Well, we can let the listeners hear them for themselves.
Right.
Well, you mentioned Tamara rolling her eyes.
Yes.
So that's a good segue to the next segment where we talked about them collaborating as husband and wife. I had no idea they had been married as long as they had.
40 years.
40 years.
I thought it was a long time. Yeah. And then, but you've worked together on and off during that whole time, right?
Yeah. Oh, a lot more lately. For a while, out of our marriage, 28 of those years, I was on the road.
It sounds like a funny question, but how do you keep creative differences from infecting the marriage?
Well, we just, you know.
Or don't you really, do you guys really see
it? If it's really her song and it's going on, I try to help her put together what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's really my song, I kind of get the last word on it.
Okay.
And but usually we're when it comes to lyrics, we both get deep into it. I'm a little more of an English major,
mm-hmm.
and she's a little. Tamara can come up with a lyric that says fog, and somehow the lyric you can feel the fog in the room. Mm-hmm. She's really good at lyrics. That really,
we have a lot of fun writing together.
Yeah,
yes, we've done
That's
a
amazing.
Lot of recent projects for some some people that
we did. We did two different. Translations?
Well, several years ago, a producer friend, Douglas Carr from Sweden, who we wrote several things. I wrote a lot with him, and Bill and I both wrote with him. And he was producing a Danish artist who had done a record in the language, in Danish. And she was going to do it in English. So you can't translate.
Not direct.
You can't translate lyrics.
Yeah.
You have to rewrite a song. You get an idea. Okay, this is about falling in love with somebody and they run away or whatever. You know, it falls apart.
So the translation
not a translation because it's just not poetic. It's not singable.
Right? Oh, okay.
You know, in Spanish or any other language, you can't do it. So we just had to rewrite a song, write a lyric. Yeah. With an idea of whatever that song was supposed to be,
We give it a shot. I mean, with this kid Carlos,
we did about five
in
of
Puerto
them
Rico
with her.
He sent us one, and I said, "Well, what is the translation of the lyrics?" And I read what it was, and I went, "This ain't gonna fly." Sometimes you get lucky, and what their subject matter and their premise will fit in English.
Yeah.
You can make it work. Rarely, usually, you just got to rewrite a song. Just rewrite it. So we kind of have fun doing that. There's one artist, Lars DK out of Denmark.
Mm-hmm. I think it's Lars Nielsen is his name.
Yeah, but they calls himself Lars DK.
That means Denmark.
Yeah.
Oh. There you go. Whatever.
Danish
Kronos. Much. I mean, kind of a mutual friend of ours sent us stuff, of concert that he did. He's a great piano player.
It was ridiculous. Performance.
Great performer.
Great song. Great.
Really good singer. He sent us this thing, and I said, "Well, send us what the translation of your lyrics is," and it wasn't going to work. So we kind of listened to the music and where the music was kind of going mood wise, and tried to fit into that with English lyrics, and we ended up getting a monster, just a screamer. And now he's wondering, you know, I did a vocal and sent it over. Now what are we going to do? Maybe we can find some really well-known singer to sing it. And I said, look at track four. You've already got one of those. How about somebody with a record deal? You know, but it's just really cool. You know, I mean, he sang it in English, so there was one. There's a Crooked Little Smile. Crooked Little Smile. We had to kind of get that together, and he got it a little better. And it's really beautiful, but that's kind of some of what we've been doing lately. It's been fun. Let's clean up dinner until we get another. I got an idea for the verse. Put the plate over there. Pull out the pad, and she writes on it.
There was a few times we were finding ourselves doing, you know, a road trip of something. We were driving somewhere, and we were driving up to San Francisco, and we were writing lyrics on the way up there because we're just, you know,
it is an interesting sort of look behind the curtain there to see them talking about their domestic life and how it intersects with what they're doing, you know. So like Bill says something about setting a plate aside and writing down some lyrics, or they're driving to San Francisco and they're working on lyrics. Just, you know, it's embedded in their life. It's not, okay, I'm going to just go to the studio and do my work there, and then, you know, some concierge is going to bring me my meal. I mean, they got you see it's got that regular day-to-day life within it.
Yeah, and they're still so active. I even bring up, I think, in the next clip that, they're from L.A. or wherever they're living now, all the way to Dayton for one night, and it's not part of a tour.
They're committed to this thing beyond that night, so which is cool.
Yep, which we'll get into a little bit. Which I guess this does serve as a little segue into the reason we were down there to begin with, which was the show.
Yes.
So We Will Yacht You.
Yes, this was specifically a Valentine's thing, and it was a tie-in with, 35th anniversary of Dirty Dancing?
I think that's right,
Yeah, it was tied in with an anniversary there, so.
Which was a rom-com, so Valentine's Day. It was supported by iHeartRadio.
Mm-hmm.
It benefited the Heart Association. Right? It had Frankie in the Knockouts doing Sweetheart, which had just been re-released in collaboration with this 80s tribute band in the studio, Stranger. So there's a lot of heart things going on. But we talked to, we got a little preview of the show. Set list would be. And well, let's hear them talk about it.
Well, you guys are very busy, as we can tell. And we should mention that we are on location in Dayton for a concert that you're performing in. This We Will Yacht You tour that will be hopefully moving about the country this summer. But this is the first one. And you guys are both performing on stage today, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how many songs? Tell us, first of all, what got you from sunny California to dreary Dayton? And what else can we expect from you?
Ken.
That was him. Okay. So they're pointing at Ken.
I think it was either Verizon or AT&T. whatever you're hanging with.
So what can we expect tonight? I mean, obviously this will be in the past.
It's going to be a little bit different tonight. Usually I'll just send my MP3s to the band, and the band will learn them, and we'll go play with the band.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got three songs that we'll play with the band, but they were kind of didn't have time, and they were unable to learn, like Turn Your Love Around.
Mm.
So I said, I'm just bringing my computer. And I got a TV mix, you know, no vocals.
Yep.
Background vocals are on it. But a mix that I've had for years. So I'm going to just sing it with that, you know. I'm going to probably do After the Love, just piano.
Nice.
Me and Tamara, that's about it. So it's kind of a little bit, this one's going to be a little bit different. We've done a lot of gigs together, just the two of us. So, I mean, I've used these kind of tracks for those kind of things.
So that was before we got to experience what we ultimately got to experience.
Yes.
But there were two things. Well, I think of three things that were crazy about that night. So we got the opportunity to go to that sound check, which was totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
And to see a veteran, a Wiley veteran, run a sound check as a guest member of the band was just something to behold, wasn't it?
Just the efficiency of what he did. Not only did he – it's funny, you see the other guys that are – they have day jobs, and so they're, I don't know, I don't call them amateur musicians. They're pros in the sense that they get paid, but they're not to the level of Bill. And they're all, it's the classic, you know, guitar player warming up and, you know, bam, 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 going through all of his sounds on his pedal board, and the keyboard player banging out stuff. And it's just this cacophony of noise everybody, as if you've never heard any of your sounds on your keyboard before, or you've never set up your pedal board before, and you're doing it for the first time right there. It's like Bill walks up, opens up his laptop, which has that backing track for Turn Your Love Around, hits the space bar, and all of a sudden it's just go time.
Doesn't really announce it. Doesn't say, hey, anything. You guys ready just to run this? And then they're playing along.
And he was able to so quickly identify little things that he could change up in the band, such as there was a spot where the telling the keyboard player not to play in the left hand because it was getting in the way of the bass part. And just how quickly he identified him, was able to make the fix, and just so efficiently done.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was my second takeaway, was I can just imagine being the band who is doing a sound check. Otherwise, they'd have been totally comfortable screwing around and, you know, making all the jokes that we talked about earlier. Right. But now you've got this legend directing the run through.
Yes.
And that had to be like so much pressure. I would have been like frozen up there.
Deer in the headlights. Yeah. You know?
But the guys ended up, they pulled it off pretty good. And they're arranging, you know, Tamara and the lead singer of Stranger and Bill are arranging harmony parts on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
And that guy, the lead singer of Stranger, is like just picked it up like that. I was impressed with that.
Yeah, he's nailing parts, but Bill's, you know, so quickly identifying little things, the little nuance and details that we associate with yacht rock. When the way he directed him to sing "Turn Your Love Around," he's like, "So they, you know, I want you on the alto part. She's going to do the tenor part and octave up or whatever it was. And then when we do it, it's turn your love around." Like that. He says, "I want Doppler vocals on that." And, you know, just boom, 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 and
then it's like, "All right, run it."
Yeah,
it's like you got no time to think about it, no time to get it locked in.
But he's aware of every single note, I swear, that's being played at any moment on that stage.
Yeah. And that was my third final takeaway, is what an honor it was to watch that firsthand. I would have loved to have gone and seen like a Chicago rehearsal, you know, which we'll get to Chicago in part two.
The show was excellent.
Show was excellent.
But sound check was even better, just from my perspective, because of watching him
behind the scenes.
Work.
Yeah, behind the scenes. And the show was outstanding. And Bill and Tamara got a huge ovation because
they sure did.
Their set, their mini set, was outstanding. Brought the house down.
Yes, the set list overall was not for the yacht purists. There was a lot of stuff that was not yachty. But they did a couple of gems, man. When they did Baby Come Back, that was pretty fun.
It was. Yes, it was.
Yep.
Yep. Well, and then the last thing is I was like a kid in a candy store, because we go to see the sound check behind the scenes. Then we get to go, I can't even believe I'm saying this, go to dinner with Dane Donahue.
Yeah.
And as we're sitting there, I get an email from Jake Raden. I'm like, my life is complete. I'm probably going to get struck down by lightning, but hey, timing's everything.
Yeah, he's going to hate me for saying this, but it's funny. We're sitting there at the bar, you and I, and my phone rings, and I pick it up, and I see that it's Dane Donahue. And I'm like, and his first question is, they got Heineken there?
And they did.
And they
which
did.
Is why he showed up. Awesome. Well, good. Well, let's put a pin in this for right now. And we'll come back to this in episode two. We'll get into a little bit of the Chicago stuff, which wasn't like the topic du jour by any stretch. But before we do that and we hit a lightning round, we should mention that this show is sort of being reprised this summer. August 19th, near Dayton again.
Yes. Right,
at an outdoor amphitheater that looks fun called Fraze.
F-R-A-Z-E. I think it's about 4,000 seats. It's an outdoor thing with a lawn, kind of.
And it's a Friday night,
yeah.
So you know, you don't have to behave yourself or be on your best behavior.
And they're both
anyway.
Doing larger set lists than what they did that night.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize
according
that.
To what Ken told me. Yeah.
But same lineup, right? Stranger,
right.
With Frankie Previtt.
Yep.
Bill and Tamara, they'll both be back.
Yep.
Maybe some other surprises. Who knows? So a little ways away. August 19th. So check that out. If you have any questions about We Will Yacht You, message John. I'm in Facebook timeout.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So anyways, that's my excuse. All right. Lightning round.
All right. As you could have guessed, I have a Bill Champlin related float your boat question for you.
As do I.
What's weird is that Runaway album of Bill's is not on Spotify. Much of it is on there and pieced together from various compilations, but the album itself does not.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, one of his songs from that album I'm going to hit you with, and then I'll get to the deeper questions. So, Satisfaction. Here goes.
Satisfaction.
So since this is the float your boat section, obviously the question is going to be how much this floats your boat. Because to me, there's parts of it when it first starts out that the recording of it doesn't quite fit the Yachty profile.
Mm-hmm.
But it is co-written by Richard Page.
Ooh, that helps.
That would be a plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Question would be maybe does the synth bass kill this one?
Yes.
Heavy synth bass.
Oh, sorry.
But do the Jerry Hay horns save it?
Yes.
Okay, so.
I agree with everything you said so far.
What are you thinking? Well, first, it comes from a compilation. This is what's funny. It comes from a compilation from 2017 just called Yacht Rock. And
is that the one with the pink cover on it and the black flamingo or something?
Yeah, and it looks like the Miami Vice font.
Yeah, yep.
It's got some interesting choices, like Smooth Sailing Tonight by the Isley Brothers is on there. I know. Johnny's Song, Jerry Rafferty, Lonely Boy is on there.
Gosh.
Midnight at the Oasis is on there.
So
Sail Away by Badfinger.
How do they come up with the actual right song, Runaway? Or without Runaway?
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction.
So are you saying you like it?
Compared to those songs, yeah. But I agreed with everything you said. To me, it like straddles the fence.
It does.
At one moment, I'm like, oh, for sure. And then I'm like, no. So I don't know. Can I get back to you on that?
You may.
All right. Well, because I'm going to sort of round it out here,
okay,
too. Going back to a song that you and I have talked about a lot, because for whatever reason, Sirius XM's Yacht Rock channel only plays one Bill Champlin song, I find.
I know.
It is Take It Uptown.
I know.
Which I don't find that yachty.
I don't really either.
But I was surprised to find out that the guys gave it a composite 62.
Really?
Yes. So, which leads me to the four songs on the Yachtsky scale by Bill Champlin, just Bill Champlin, not anything else he's done.
Okay.
So, Runaway is a 91.25.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's too high, too.
For the rocking side of the yacht.
Yeah.
Wow.
I Don't Want You Anymore is 88.75.
Okay.
One Way Ticket, 76.5. And then I mentioned Take It Uptown, 62.
Wow.
I don't find any of those that yachty.
No.
The yachtiest song of all is what I'm going to submit to you for Doesn't Float Your Boat, and I think it's his yachtiest tune, Gotta Get Back to Love.
Yeah. So what, you had a 90-something, an 80-something? What were the
91, but call it an 89, a 76, and a 62.
So that adds up to maybe roughly 225. I would score, Got to Get Back to Love, 226 points.
Yeah,
I mean, good gravy.
I definitely think it's
so much yachtier.
Yeah, yep. And I was considering going between that and Satisfaction, but I went with this one because I do find it yachtier. So
yeah,
there you go.
I do. That is one of the others that is on my, as we've talked about, short list of you can play somebody one song to tell them what Yacht Rock sounds like. That's on the list.
Yeah, I agree.
That is on the list.
All right, well, let me switching gears here now to A Buried Treasure. So this is, talk about serendipity. So we did this podcast, the original recording, what, like 6-8 weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just today I'm listening to, I got to give props to Yacht Rocket Radio, Captain Hugh.
Yeah.
And I come across this tune by an artist I think I've heard of, but I'm not sure, Leon Ware.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you know much about him?
Not at all. I knew the name maybe because other people have posted it, but I've never investigated it. So
the first thing I find out is he was from Detroit, which is cool for us. And the Wikipedia page describes him as an American songwriter, producer, composer, and singer who's best known for producing hits for other artists, including Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones, Maxwell, Marvin Gaye.
Hmm.
So total props. But this tune, I'm going to save for you for next week the tune that Captain Hugh was playing on Yacht Rock and Radio, because I go to this album and the next thing I find out is Bill and Tamara sang on it.
Whoa.
Yes. Not only that, Bill co-wrote the following tune, Miracles.
We can make miracles when we come together. It's a miracle. Our love is strong in the changes. In the changes we're going through. Baby, I'm still in love with you.
Tell Tell you what, he could have sold that one to Earth, Wind & Fire. Then he only would have had to come up with one more. Man.
I know. Well, and he collaborated with some likely characters. So the personnel on this record, which you got to go listen to, is David Foster, Marty Page, David Page. Yep, I thought Dean Parks, Steve Lukather, Nathan Ace, Chuck Rainey, Abe Laboriel, Letty Castro, Bill Champlin, and Tamara, as I mentioned. Yeah, so chock full of personnel. So, but 1982, right in the heart of Yacht Rock. Go listen to it, because next week I am going to pick another song off the same album that's even yachtier than that. It, fun little game. You can try to figure out which one it is.
All right.
It would say fun. Yeah. it'll be a and ton little. Of fun. Yes. In a game. All right. So that's that. I mentioned, by the way, that was co-written by Bill Champlin and Leon Ware. So, back to you. Try to top that.
Ooh. How do you like that? We got viewer mail.
Ooh.
Ha.
We need a sound effect for viewer mail.
Mail's in.
All right. How do you like that one?
Okay. Viewer mail. Good. Very good.
Okay. Well, this came from listener Richard, and I believe he's our New Zealand correspondent.
Yeah.
As I recall.
Yep.
And he told a little backstory that he took he's at a record store and took a flyer on a record that how many times has this happened to us when we were younger? The cover catches your eye.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that cover looks cool. He flipped it over and it was the picture of like 70s sort of soft rockers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, all right, I got to take a chance on this. And it was like probably in the dollar bin or whatever the equivalent is. And he got it home. And it was just blown away. It was just yacht track after yacht track. It was a band called Morocco, Morocko.
Mm-hmm.
The album's from 1981, and he actually sent us a snap of the liner notes in the back. And down at the bottom, it says this: funky and polished, Morocco is a great album by a very tight and talented band. Influences include Steely Dan, Toto, Prince, Earth, Wind & Fire, etc. If you like your rock funky or your funk hard, this is for you. And I submit to you a song called Giving It Up.
Giving it up. For living it up. Ooh, giving it up. For the love. Well, giving it up. For living it up.
Not to be confused with living it up.
No, this is giving it up.
Giving it
and
up.
It's
yes.
Giving it up. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that was out of nowhere. This is a contemporary band?
Like now? No, 1981.
Oh, 81. Okay, so they
were. Can you imagine his joy getting this home and taking a flyer on it and having all that happening?
Yeah, well, imagine my joy when you sent this to me, and I'm just going to ask listeners to go check out another tune off there called Come and Do It, which is, I think, even yachtier.
Spotify upload sounds like it's like a third generation tape, maybe even came off cassette. It's got a lot of dropouts and stuff.
Well, track down the vinyl.
I know.
All right.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, hit us. Actually, I'm going to have you go last on Off the Map.
You do it. You go.
So I'm going to go next because it's quick. So we talked to Peter Freestadt. We talked to Bill Champlin. We have not talked to the W, but I'm going to go to that 2 album from CWF.
Ah, yes.
Right? And again, I was surprised. I had no idea that they roped Michael McDonald into a tune.
Yeah.
And so that was not only a buried treasure, but it's off the map because it's 2020. And it also features none other than Tamara Champlin. Loving the World.
Get Michael McDonald, man, there's personnel on that record.
Yes,
you got
sir.
Toto represented, you got the Michael McDonald era Doobies represented, you got Champlin representing Champlin in Chicago, and Peter bringing in Sweden. It's like, geez Louise,
hello.
It's all there.
Hello. Well, speaking of all there, are you all there?
I am all there. So I want to hearken back to the very beginning of this episode, and we had a little piece of music at the beginning that had the voice of Mr. Bill Champlin on it. And I've been holding that in my back pocket for quite some time because Page 99 has branched out. We have a new album that will be coming out later this summer. And the feature track, title track of that album is a cover of a Champlin song from the days of Sons of Champlin. Mm. He did not write it, but it was written by a good, actual high school friend of his, Rob Montoya. I heard it when I was kind of going through some early Champlin stuff, and I was immediately inspired to cover it. And that is going to be the feature, like I say, the lead track. I don't have a release date for you yet, but as a nugget for people that listen to this podcast, I'm going to play the entirety of that tune before it's even released. So get your cassette decks ready to hit record. And here comes my arrangement of For Imagination's Sake.
Featuring Bill Champlin on vocals.
And as an add-on, Tamara is singing in the backups as well. So we got both of them on this.
As I recall, Bill had some nice things to say about your arrangement of this tune. And he really liked your drummer, I heard.
Yeah, I have to mention also Paul Pesco on guitar.
And how would we know Paul Pesco?
Paul Pesco was part of the Daryl Hall Live at Daryl's House band. He was would have been the second band leader, the guy with the long, straight black hair.
Phenomenal guitar.
That was Paul Pesco. He played back with Madonna and all that stuff. He's an East Coaster. And also the sax player there is a guy named Chase Baird, and he harkens from New York as well. His sort of bio calls him the touring sax player for the Chaka Khan band.
Wow.
So
you're starting to get some personnel on your records, my friend.
Man. Oof,
dang. Wow. And, well, I happen to know that Peter Freestadt's also going to be on this record. Ooh, okay. So I don't know that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's give him one more tease. Let's tease next week's episode, shall we? But outstanding work, by the way. All right. So next week's episode, we are going to get into a little bit of the third rail.
Yeah, he didn't want to talk too much about Chicago, did he? He was willing to, but he didn't think that was
the most relevant part of his career. So exactly.
That's well said.
But we'll leave people with that final tease, and here's a little bit about what he had to say about maybe where that started to go wrong.
Yep.
The first part of it was really great. We had a ball, but then things just got more corporate and more, you know, just decisions were being made outside of the band thing.
Right.
And I always said, man, when a band starts making decisions in a boardroom, instead of a pizza parlor, some shit's going wrong.
Ahoy, Polloi.